Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Okay, a thought exercise now. Say you have two employees, and on paper, seems like they do roughly the same job. One is a man, the other is a woman. Of course, it's my opinion that there shouldn't be a gender-based pay gap between these two, but what if the woman had a decade more experience and she'd done well on the job, and the man was a newly minted college graduate who maybe wasn't really trying to prove himself? Should there be a pay gap then? But again, remember, what if on paper they are doing what's called comparable work? Well, that phrase, comparable work, is one of the sticking points in the current pay equity bill under consideration on Beacon Hill. And the proposal would seek to define comparable work in Massachusetts. It's one of those devil in the details that Governor Charlie Baker talks about, so we want to really understand those details and ask, what is comparable work? How do you define it? Should the State House even be trying to define it? And what impact could it have on Massachusetts workers and employees? And employers, and more broadly, what could a pay equity bill have on the state as a whole? So for more, we're joined now by Victoria Budson. She's executive director of the Women in Public Policy Program at Harvard University's Kennedy School of Government. She's also chair of the State's Commission on the Status of Women, which advised the bill's sponsors. Victoria Budson, welcome back.
Nice to see you, Meghna.
It's great to have you. And listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you like the idea of a pay equity bill in Massachusetts? And do you think the bill should include things like defining what comparable work is? If you're an employee, how do you think this would change how you work or the compensation you receive? And if you are an employer, let us know what you think about this as well. Happy to hear from both sides on this. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also send us a tweet at Radio Boston. Okay, Victoria, so there's a lot of aspects to this bill, and I just started with this defining comparable work thing because it really caught my attention. I mean, first of all, should a piece of state legislation even be seeking to define comparable work?
Well, we've had a comparable work bill that's been passed for many, many years in the legislature. The Supreme Judicial Court has required the legislature to clarify exactly what it means in the definition. Now, there's 24 states throughout the United States that have already passed the language, which is in our bill. For example, the language talks about substantially similar work in that it requires substantially similar skill, effort, and responsibility, and is performed under similar working conditions. Now, note that this definition is used by a variety of states: California, New York, Tennessee, Minnesota, Kentucky, South Dakota, Kansas, Wyoming, Virginia, Pennsylvania.
So we're not alone. Yeah.
Not alone. And what you'll notice about those states is there are states that one would consider liberal, states one would consider conservative, states which are red, states which are blue. There's a lot of very interesting things in this bill. And the comparable work piece is really a low-hanging fruit, very standard clarification within the law.
Okay, so I do want to get to those other parts of the bill, but I don't want to leave comparable work just yet because it is one of those points which groups around the state who support the concept, absolutely, of gender pay equity, they point to this as one of the sections where they're not so comfortable with the language of the bill. I mean, just recently, Megan Sullivan, who's on the board of directors for the Associated Industries of Massachusetts, and they represent thousands of businesses across the state, she wrote that, quote, "When I decide that a female with fewer years of seniority has skills and abilities greater than a male co-worker, under this law, she would be precluded from advancing that female employee's career and rewarding her outstanding hard work." I mean, so she's. I think Megan Sullivan is saying that she thinks that the language does actually limit employers in terms of compensating people according to the work they're actually doing.
What's terrific about this bill is it writes into the law that Megan Sullivan or any other employer in the state is welcome to pay people differently in the same job when there's differences in seniority, merit, production, sales, geographic location, education, training, travel required, and so on. So this bill literally states that you can pay employees in the same job highly differently as long as you can make a merit-based argument for why.
Okay.
What this bill states clearly is you cannot pay two people in the same job where all attributes are equal, education, training, travel, education, and so forth, just because one is of one gender and one is of another.
Okay, so interesting, because I was looking at some literature from the world of HR, and I was seeing that, some people were raising the concern that even sort of assessing positions and pay, just making that assessment is kind of difficult because, you know, statisticians who specialize in pay audits say that most HR systems don't even capture all the information that's really needed to group people into comparable jobs, or to say like this set of people is doing the same thing, so let's look at if there's any pay discrepancies amongst them.
Comparable work is certainly an important provision. I think the number of issues or times comparable work will come up is incredibly small. So it's something which we can talk about, but there isn't an issue or concern that comparable work requires people to pay an equal salary to people who have different outcomes in the position. It just isn't the case.
Okay. So let's talk about what has happened in at least another state that I believe signed a similar bill into law. California signed a bill like this into law last year. What difference did it make there? Do we know?
You know, I don't have any data on California. And what I had just shared, this isn't a provision where you see lots of court cases. This is not a highly litigious event or situation. What's really phenomenal about this bill, and you had talked about employers and how they're reacting and relating. One of the things which is great to see is we have a very active business community here in the Boston area, and the Boston Chamber of Commerce, which represents thousands and thousands of businesses and is the leading business organization in Massachusetts and for professional women throughout New England, has signed on in support and written a very powerful letter where they talk about, as the leading business organization for professional women in the Boston region, that the chamber is proud to be a vocal supporter of this pay equity legislation. Nearly 50% of Greater Boston's workforce is made up of women, and they identify that women are still being paid significantly less than their male colleagues. And I think what's really important is when we talk about the wage gap in this bill, to understand what this means. Now, why are we seeing so many organizations and so many companies getting into the business of focusing on pay equity? Here in Massachusetts, we have Mayor Marty Walsh, very focused, Mayor of Boston, with the Women's Workforce Council, encouraging businesses to sign on to what's called the 100% Talent Compact. And you see the largest employers in the state voluntarily stepping up and saying, we want to solve the problems of pay equity. We've got Partners Healthcare, Putnam Investments, Hill Holiday, Staples, State Street, Suffolk Construction.
A lot of businesses, because I think people are coming around to the idea that it's good for business.
Correct.
But let me ask you that that statement that you had from the chamber, the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce, when was that put out?
So this was put out on January 27th.
January, okay. So because so I was looking at some coverage of...
And I should note, Mayor Marty Walsh is not the only one. I can already hear, you know, we've got major support from mayors all over the 351 cities and towns, because what we know in Massachusetts, our workforce is our greatest resource.
Yeah.
This is how we grow our economy in Massachusetts. We're predominantly an economy of intellectual workers. We do well when we're able to keep our talent here. Yeah.
But I was looking at some information about the fact that back in October, so before that letter that you just read from, Jim Rooney, head of the Greater Boston Chamber of Commerce, kind of conducted an internal survey amongst chamber members. And, you know, at that time, more than half of the chamber members said they supported the bill, but about 35% wanted to propose amendments to make the bill more workable for business. And one of the things that they were concerned about was the comparable work part that we've already discussed, but also other aspects of the bill, such as a requirement to report wage information by gender to the state, not being able to ask about previous salary history to potential employees. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I will. And I'm going to talk about another provision as well, which I think was of tremendous interest to businesses. So one of the things that happens, if you imagine pay discrimination like a snowball rolling downhill, When you have an employee who's underpaid in an early portion of their career, we've got great data from the American Association of University Women and many other research organizations, we know that it's common that women will receive a lower salary for the exact same position with the exact same number of years of experience and so forth in that first position. When an employer can say, Meghna, what were you getting at your last job? And if you were underpaid, then in your next role, your salary is pegged to the underpayment of the last role.
Yeah.
And what happens is professionally, then over time, you get that snowball effect where the pay discrimination builds on itself. This law is great for business because it says you need to know what that job that you're asking someone to do, what it's worth, and how you gauge performance.
Mm. But on the other hand, I mean, some businesses do say that we need to know salary history so that we can see if we can match the needs of the potential hire. Or
what's fabulous about that is they're welcome to make an offer and see if those needs are met. They can ask someone what their salary needs are. You just can't ask and then base the decision on hiring on what they made in their last role.
Yeah. Victoria, stand by just for a second because I want to let people know that we are talking about the pay equity bill, the gender pay equity bill that's under consideration on Beacon Hill and its various aspects of it. And we talked originally about the idea that this bill could define what comparable work is in Massachusetts, and we want to know what your thoughts are on it. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Do you like the idea of a pay equity bill being passed in the state? What about the pushback that some businesses have been giving that Massachusetts already has laws on the books that cover many of the same issues that the pay equity bill seeks to remedy? Do you think that maybe that's a legitimate piece of pushback? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're speaking with Victoria Budson. She is founder and executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Victoria, hang in here for just a second because I want to take a quick call. Tom is calling from Salem. You're on the air, Tom.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. What's your thought?
I just don't think it should be the role of the government to kind of really try to define and try to, you know, push its reach into what a comparable job situation should be. Let me kind of use a scenario. So I've worked in the food industry a lot. So a comparable job, you know, if you're comparing one chef to another chef, but if the restaurants are completely two different restaurants, you know, a chef working at a mid-range restaurant may be making $45,000, $55,000, where a chef at a higher-end restaurant making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000. So, you know, that right there, that's not comparable based on, you know, what kind of job or the demographic and the kind of type of restaurant that it is.
Right. Tom, I'm just going to jump in here, but thank you so much for your call because I want to give Victoria a chance to respond to that.
Tom, that's a great question. When you're looking at two individuals, and let's say, as your example talked about, a chef in a high-end restaurant and a chef that was in a more average restaurant, if they aren't in a restaurant that's within the same employer, that's within the same company, then that's not an issue, which is covered by the bill. If it is within the same company, you just made the case of how they're in substantially dissimilar situations because one is at a higher end and one is at an average type of sales in terms of the restaurant industry. And it's only if someone is doing the same work in the same type of role in the same organization, same region, and so forth. And one of the things, while we're talking about business, that businesses were so keen on is this bill does something really important. This bill provides an opportunity that any business which has done a wage audit and looked at their compensation practices within the past 3 years and then taken reasonable steps to address any inequities that they find, they receive what we think of as a safe harbor provision. If someone sues or litigates, they have a protective presumptive assumption, which shows that they're trying to solve the problem.
Interesting, because I've seen that some of the other concerns raised by some folks were anytime you codify anything into law, what you're really doing is opening the door for litigation. And this would protect. Are you saying that there's an aspect of protecting businesses against litigation in this bill?
You know, there are. And I'm going to tell you why, because I think in this case, it's really important to not understand what the law is, but what the intent is. And the intent is to give businesses the ability and the tools to look into and analyze this problem – without penalizing if people are trying to get it right. It's going to take time. Virtually every business that's large has some amount of gap. And the idea is to say, it's okay if you have a gap. Your job is to go and solve it. And there is tolerance and support for the solving of the problem.
So I've been told by our producers that our phone lines are full. Surprise, surprise, people want to talk about pay equity. So let's get another caller here. Susan is calling from Marlboro. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi. I wanted to make two points about this. One is that employers are not posting the salary ranges for the jobs, so they're making it very hard for people to apply for the right jobs. But the real thing that drives me crazy about this forever is that what someone is paid in a previous job is completely irrelevant to the current job. The current job should have a salary range already established for internal equity inside that company.
Susan, excellent, interesting point. Let's turn that back to Victoria.
You know, Susan's got it just right. Employers should know what the work within their organization is worth, and internal equity is something which anyone in the HR profession is familiar with the terms, and managers are as well, that companies need to know what the jobs are, how they're organized, and then what they're paid. And it's true. You know, businesses agree. That's why the chamber's on board. People agree that in this day and age, you should pay people within a range that's reasonable and respectful for the work being done.
Let's get another caller here. Lemma is calling from Andover. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. And I apologize, I'm driving right now. But my point is that I work as a scientist in Cambridge. And what I see right now, for me as a woman and working mom, it's very difficult to maintain 8 hours every day. And because I have a small child and I have to make sure that he has doctor appointments and everything else which is needed. But at the same time, when it comes to the promotion, usually the men who always sit in the office and they don't really take care of their children, they can do 8 hours, they will be promoted because our leadership looks at them as those people who are always in the office, always doing the job, and those people who, you know, cannot commit to that 8 hours are not going to be promoted.
Let me just take it back for you because I want to hear what Victoria has to say and be safe while you're driving. Thank you so much for calling, Victoria Budson.
Lima, thanks for that call and that comment. Certainly people often talk about how people balance work and other commitments they have in their life, whether that's childcare or elder care or community responsibility. One of the things that this bill does is when one looks at seniority, if one has taken parental leave, the number of months calculated, you cannot take parental leave and subtract it out of the seniority. So some of the issues that you're addressing actually were thought about and placed into this bill with tremendous support from the business community. And in terms of face time in the day-to-day, that does impact salary depending on who your employer is. And certainly there have been progress made on paid leave and the ability to have that type of time off, but it's outside the scope of this bill beyond that piece of seniority.
But let me ask you about that, because I think there are some folks out there, at least in parts of the business community, who would say, Victoria Budson, you're making exactly the right point that maybe instead of putting together a piece of legislation that that focuses on gender and pay equity, we ought to be doing more engagement and outreach and support of these other aspects of the workplace which may contribute to the pay gaps that we see, like in the case of Lemma, the caller, our efforts are better focused on that.
You know, Meghna, I think you've got a great point in that there's lots of different aspects. It's really a whole mosaic that creates unequal pay in the workplace. In our society, we see, you know, repeated instances of where time that people need to spend with families or other things sometimes comes out with less pay or less promotion at work. Now, the most successful employers, and frankly, the largest employers in the state, have really been innovative in putting a focus on results and identifying flexible work or shared work hours or creating systems where people can telecommute or hot desk or hotel desk or have flexibility of schedule or flexibility of location. What people want, both in Massachusetts and throughout the United States, is to create a system where workers can be at their highest productivity, where their family commitments are met. So when they're at work, they're not just sitting in the chair, but they're physically, mentally, and emotionally present. And to do that means that you employ all the tools at your disposal.
So I'm hearing you say that you want us to do both. Pass this bill and do those other things.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. That will help us grow our economy and keep it strong here in Massachusetts.
Let's take another call. Matt is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Matt.
Hi, how are you? I have more of a question, really, and that is how this bill impacts the negotiation aspect of salary when you take a new job, because that creates a wide range of salaries both within genders and across gender. And would that mean that the individual no longer can negotiate salary at the onset of a new job?
Interesting question, Matt. Victoria Budson?
Matt, that's a great question. This doesn't change salary negotiation in any way. There certainly are employers, particularly at the lower end of the socioeconomic strata, where one is in an hourly position where the wage is what the wage is and there isn't negotiation. This bill doesn't impact that. At other types of negotiations and salary, the only thing that changes with this bill, Matt, is that an employer can't say to you, what were you earning in your last job? Mm. Now, you could decide that you want to tell the prospective employer, and you certainly have the ability to do that. The prospective employer can also ask you to submit in writing to them that can they have that information, but only after they've made you an offer. You can't be put in the position of having to give that up at the beginning of a negotiation.
You know, Victoria, one thing which this bill doesn't address, and maybe it's by design because it's almost a whole nother kettle of fish, is, you know, we know about the gender pay gap between men and women and sort of the average numbers. It's like, 80 cents to the dollar on average in Massachusetts, right? But what I was going to say is that the gap is even more egregious when you consider women of color.
Absolutely. And men of color.
And men of color. And so, I mean, I'm not seeing that the bill is specifically addressing that in any way.
It doesn't specifically address those disparities, because what it does is it means that all employees would have to be paid equally. So it doesn't write in all of the different types of gaps. It creates a structure legally so that all of them would have to come back to a single norm. And let me walk through, and I'd like to ask our listeners, literally imagine where you sit down and pay your bills when I'm reading this. I want you to, whether that's at your dining room table, whether that's at your laptop, sitting in front of the TV, but compared to the white male dollar, when you look across the United States, white women are making 78 cents on that dollar. Native American women are making 60 cents on that dollar. Hispanic and Latina women are making 53 cents on that dollar. African-American women, 64 cents on that dollar. Now, we often talk about the wage gap, but it's really gaps.
Gaps, yeah.
And in between each of those, you would find men of color. And what we know here in the United States is we have lots of workers who, you know, you've got a two people within that family who are bringing home a paycheck, and even working full-time, they are not able to afford their housing, their health care, their education, and food and energy.
I want to squeeze one more call here. Paul Haru is representative. I should say Representative Paul Haru is calling from Attleboro. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
I understand you're one of the co-sponsors of the bill. Is it going to pass in the House?
Well, we're hopeful. The bill has dozens of co-sponsors, and you know, it has bipartisan support as well. Right now, I think what they're doing is basically, you know, the bill is in the committee, and they're kind of tweaking it, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and making sure that it's, you know, going to be a really strong piece of legislation, because no bill that is filed stays in the form it's in when we actually vote on it. So, but when it does come up for a vote, it will pass. There's no doubt about that. It's just, you know, when that's going to happen. That's what we're dealing with right now.
Right. Well, thank you so much for that call, Representative Haru. And we also read today that Speaker DeLeo was quoted in the Boston Globe as saying he definitely wants to get this to a vote before the end of the session. But Victoria Budson, we literally have just some seconds to go. Say it does pass both chambers of the House and Senate on Beacon Hill. What do we know about what the governor, what Charlie Baker thinks about it? Do you think, he's always talked about the devil in the details, as we discussed at the beginning of this conversation.
It will take 107 votes to be veto-proof. We currently have 104 co-sponsors.
Co-sponsors.
Co-sponsors. So I would hope that Charlie Baker would look across the state and want to do everything he can to ensure our economic prosperity. And signing this bill would be an action step towards Massachusetts economic growth and prosperity.
Well, Victoria Budson is founder and executive director of the Women and Public Policy Program at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard. Great to have you. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.